Hey, are you hiding anyone here, friend?
No, I swear it.
You wouldn't be lying to me now, would you? I got no time for liars. Puts me in a bad mood. Hey, when I'm in a bad mood, I tend to lash out.
I promise, I'm telling you the truth.
We'll see. What's this?
And welcome back to the Next Standard Watchcast. I am your host, Alex Navarro, and some guys are still coming to kill us. That hasn't ended yet. We are still under constant duress of dudes wanting to kill us. But this week, as I believe our friend Brad Shoemaker put it, this is the reason for the season, so to speak. This week's film is the 2011 Indonesian action extravaganza, The Raid. Brad Shoemaker.
I had to wonder why we didn't put this one last in the rotation, because I don't know how you follow this up. I don't know how anything could follow this up.
There is a reason I didn't put this last, and it is specifically because Dread is, in a lot of ways, directly compared to this movie. Because they feature very similar premises, despite the fact that they were basically in development around the same time, and I don't think one really knew about the other.
Okay.
But I understand what you're saying here. The Raid is really something else, isn't it?
I should have just made... I thought about making a list of superlatives to bring in here and just rotate through them throughout this podcast, including, let's say, ludicrous, mind-blowing, completely fucking insane.
Okay. I would apply just about all of that terminology to this film. Vinny Caravella, would you agree?
Yeah, this movie is bananas. It's, I mean, we'll get to it as we walk through it. There are points where I was confused as to why, like, I initially thought, oh, we were flipping the script here. This is going to be the SWAT team is coming to get the bad guys.
Mm-hmm.
There was basically a hallway scene away from being like, what is happening in this movie? Yeah, narratively, it's about as deep as a puddle, but I think just the action in it is ridiculous.
Yeah, the story is really just a propellant that kind of gets you from action scene to action scene. But, you know, I think it's reasonably well acted. It's delivered at about as well as it needs to be. And it does get you to, I'm going to say, some truly spectacular fight sequences that are, you know, I mean, look, we talk a lot about the prevalence of Asian action cinema, and a lot of that conversation tends to dominate around China and Japan, but Indonesia ain't fucking around, man.
No.
In
a movie that kind of takes its time to initially get started up, it never stops ratcheting from encounter to encounter. I think that's what impressed me the most was, okay, clearly this was the biggest fight scene in the movie. We're going to now, how can you top that?
Now we're going to wind things down, right?
Yeah. And then it continues to kind of ratchet up.
It is, I think, a celebration of just how much more ridiculous can this get. And they continually find ways to do it and create fights that, I'm going to say, just genuinely get better with each sequence. Like, it is a movie that does, in fact, manage to top itself over and over and over again.
Plus, it has I wouldn't say muted. I would, I guess, say appropriate use of CG for what it's doing. Like, it is, there's a lot of physical stunts happening here, and there are points where you're like, oh, that's not a real person, but that was worth the CG to show what they showed there. That person's back bending over a railing or something. They don't go out of their way to do it. I mean, there's a lot of squib work here. I don't know how much is
there
CG
actually
and
isn't.
How much-
Is
okay, is it all CG?
So there's some squibs, but there's also a lot of digital gun stuff in this movie because they used airsoft guns for this.
Okay.
None of the gunfire is real. It's all digital.
Okay.
Which blew my mind to read, because, like, I guess you can tell once you know that and go back and look at it, but I certainly did not clock it at the time.
It works for the atmosphere they're setting, which is we're gonna go from 0 to 11 constantly.
Yes.
It's either there's no just I shot a guy, really. I mean, it happens once in a while, but even when that happens, it's we shot a guy in the most gratuitous way possible.
Yeah. Like, I mean, just to jump ahead a little bit, it's kind of basically the first giant fight where they cut the hole in the floor and jump down and then have to fight a bunch of dudes. It's like, on the scale of deaths in this movie, it's like toward the bottom.
Mm.
But it's the part where Joe Taslim like gets knocked down and then like slams a guy's head down.
Yes.
Who's trying to kill him. And then starts unloading his whole pistol into his head. It's like you could have shot him once in the head and he would have been dead, but you fucking emptied the clip right into his face from 3 inches away. It's like even the most minor of bad guy deaths in this goes so much harder than it needs to.
Yes.
But it just typifies this entire movie.
100%.
It's like where I think I said for Trespass, every time somebody dies, it felt, and there's only like two or three deaths in Trespass, it feels very meaningful. In this, every time somebody pulls a trigger, I was ready to wince because it was probably going to mean something was going to happen. I mean, people are just, you lose count. The body count is one of those off the charts ones.
Oh,
it's up
don't
there with
worry.
The Rambo
someone
movies.
On IMDb kept count for you. I think it's somewhere around 120 people die in this movie.
Okay. And I feel like you kind of viscerally feel most of those deaths in a way that don't just make it fodder. Like, you know,
they're bad deaths almost every time.
I'll grant that there are a lot of movies I have not seen, so this is a qualified assessment, but I think it's the most brutal movie I've ever seen.
In 2011, when I saw this, which I did actually see this movie, I believe in theaters when it came around, it was not a wide release in the US, but at its peak, it did hit about 800 theaters in the country.
What was it like seeing this with an audience?
Fucking mind-blowing, man. Like, and it wasn't like a huge audience, but everyone that was there was like hooting and hollering through it. It was very much like a what the fuck am I seeing kind of experience.
Yeah, man. Holy shit. Like, I will say my girlfriend is the least squeamish person about movie violence I have ever seen, like just completely unfazed by gore,
mm-hmm.
brutality, whatever. Like, even she was, like, cringing and, like, putting a pillow in front of her face during this.
I assume the first time that guy got the fire axe in the shoulder, that was the moment when you're like, okay, this is what we're doing here.
Yeah.
It's not, like, I didn't find it, I don't like body horror stuff, but brutal is probably the right word. I don't think it's overly grotesque in ways of, like, pulling fingernails off, but it is...
They don't really linger on it, is the thing. Like, they don't sit there and make you luxuriate in the grievous injury that has just happened.
I think that's part of the brutality is that it is all happening so fast, and they are constantly following crazy things up with crazier things. You don't even have time to fully make sense of what you've just witnessed.
Yeah, like, I think that's probably what it is. Like, in a horror movie or in a hostel or something, there's tension built up to the horrible thing that's going to happen. Here, you know, somebody's just running and then suddenly something horrible just happened to them, or they're just in a room and a million horrible things are happening to a million, to 100 people.
It's like that first fight scene I keep talking about, like after 8 different insane deaths or injuries, you barely have time to process what's going on before they start making an improvised explosive out of a refrigerator. You know?
Yep.
It's like, oh my God, this just does not stop.
The part where he straight up just whips that propane tank out of the sink and shoves it into that fridge is like one of the most deft moves anywhere in this movie. And there are a lot of deft moves.
Yeah, it's wild. I did not have a necessarily I don't love the body horror stuff. It was definitely cringy and wincy, but I didn't have a problem of like, this is too gross for me to watch.
Yeah.
And I'm usually pretty sensitive to that kind of stuff. I think because it just keeps moving. Also, it becomes a little cartoonish in some ways, but it doesn't lessen the impact. It's
no.
So, that door jam kill.
Oh, God, man.
Maybe my least favorite thing in this movie.
You mean the part where he pulls him down into the elevator shaft thing?
I think it's the broken door jam.
Or, that's right, right. It is a broken door jam.
Yeah, is.
But he also like jumps down yes. a bit, and it's just like the way that dude's neck comes down on it is.
Yeah, ooh. Is no good.
Is it's truly no good. Stunning.
Yeah, and it's one of the ones they go back to, and they're like. And you might have missed this. Did you want to see this? Did you want to see what happened here?
Yeah, here's a quick refresh for you.
Yeah.
Well, so let's talk a little bit about how this movie came together, because this is the work of not an Indonesian director, but Gareth Evans, who is a Welsh director, who had only made one independent film prior to coming to Indonesia. And so he had been... tasked with, I guess, a freelance job doing a film about the indigenous martial art of Indonesia, which is prominently featured in this film, which is called Pencak Silat. That is more of an umbrella term for a bunch of different regional and subgenre like martial arts of Indonesia. Like, there's a lot of, depending on what where you're from, there are different variations on it. But the real thing is that it is a combination of strikes, grapples, throws, and weapons training, kind of all mixed together. And that is what they are using here, primarily in the film. So he went in, he went to Indonesia, he did this film, and he was like, he got really into the practice of the martial art, and went on to direct, and in the process of that, he met Iko Uwais, who was in, you know, a fairly accomplished martial artist in Indonesia, but not professionally. Prior to the film they did prior to this one, which I forget the name of, but it was a smaller action film, he was working for a telecom company in Indonesia and had not really done any acting at all before. But Evans was super impressed with him, was like, you should be an actor.
That's, man. If that dude was rolling around with that physique, just like delivering phones.
Mm-hmm.
And not being a professional actor, like, that's completely bananas. That's amazing. I mean, I'm sure he was practicing martial arts already.
Yeah.
But, like, when you see the guy at the beginning training, it's just like, okay, this guy must be the biggest action star in Indonesia, clearly.
And he has gone on to, you know, a fairly successful career since then, like, both in Indonesian cinema and in Hollywood. He appeared in the Star Wars Force Awakens. He was in, I believe, Furious 7. So he has done some mainstream Hollywood acting, as well as continued to act in Indonesia. But the film they made in 2009 was called Merantau, which was a, like I said, a smaller scale film and a movie that apparently audiences were a little, you know, a little iffy on, because it took a while for the action to really kick in that movie. It was like 45 minutes before the first real fight scene. So when they went about making this film, they're like, all right, we're just going. As soon as this movie gets going, it's going to get going. So they were originally going to make a movie called Berandal, which was a bigger budget, much more large scale film that was a prison gangster movie. But they ran into budget issues. So they put that, they kind of put that one by the side, and they were like, what's something we can do at this budget level? And that is where they decided to come up with this, you know, let's just go into this tower block and let's just have everything take place in this tower block and build this action movie around that. So Iwai and Yayan Ruyan, who is the Mad Dog character, are the guys who did pretty much the entire fight choreography for the movie.
Oh, wow.
And Ruyan, similarly, had not done a ton of acting prior to this. But he was a practicing Pencak Silat martial artist. He had been practicing since he was 13. He had also taught the discipline in a number of European countries over the years. And like him, he also went on to do a number of Hollywood action films. So for the style of the film, they wanted to give it kind of a documentary-like feel, like you were kind of on the ground with these guys as all the shit was going down. So they shot the entire thing. Vinny, maybe you know more about this camera than I do. The Panasonic AF-100 camcorder.
Oh, yeah. We had those. It was the original ones with the P2 cards at Giant Bomb.
Yep. So yeah. The entire movie was pretty much done with that. And they used a little bit of stabilizing to make sure it wasn't just, like, going to make everyone nauseous. But it was all basically done with handhelds. And then lighting, the way they lit a lot of these scenes while they were kind of rotating the camera and doing wild shit around the fights, the lighting people would kind of move around behind the camera as they were doing it so that they could Because lighting something like this, the way they were filming it, was definitely a challenge.
It's really striking to look at this movie kind of in the same vein as Everything Everywhere in terms of what you can get with almost no money these days.
Yeah.
Like, this thing was made for $1 million.
Yeah.
$1 million. Like, there may be certain externalities of shooting in Indonesia that makes that money go a little further than it would here, but still, like, that's like nothing.
I mean, and, it's very soundstagey, you know, like, but like not in a way that doesn't look right, you know?
Right. Like, yeah, I mean, you know, I started to say it does look kind of low budget, but again, like it looks professional.
Yes.
You know? It does not look like what a movie made 30 years ago on $1 million would have looked like, right? Like it's insane between cheap, good cameras and like cheap to free digital effects capabilities, like what you can do on like no money and a ton of talent.
I think the use the kind of shaky cam stuff is a little much, at least in the beginning, until you're used to it. My wife was definitely like, "This is gonna make me sick." It's during some of the fight scenes.
I think once you get past the gun battles, it's not as bad. It eases off
after a bit, yeah. Which is a nice relief. It really, that hallway scene is where I think it's maybe at its worst, that where they're trapped in the hallway, and it's frantic, right? It's supposed to be frantic.
You mean like the staircase section where those guys are like bearing down on them? Or,
the stairwell when they kind of basically lose 90% of their squad.
Right.
It's supposed to be hectic and I'm sure dizzying, but it's a little tough to watch.
It has like Black Hawk Down, like we are just going like Bourne style, like we are going for maximum shaky to kind of give you the feeling of you are in a war zone here.
Yes.
Yeah, that's kind of a stylistic choice they made. You know, they could have creatively done something different there.
Yeah,
and it wouldn't have been like that. But I'm talking more just in terms of kind of basic fidelity, image quality, you know, cinematography.
Yeah,
like there's just a baseline of quality to this that kind of just again just blows my mind in the modern context.
Yeah, I mean, to that creative style, the basic framing of the shots, the entrances and their choices for certain close-ups, it's very well done. It is,
yeah,
it's put together well. I think the editing is done well for the most part in it, and
it has that continuity you're looking for in those fight sequences. It doesn't feel like it's jumping around like crazy.
And I think, Brad, maybe to your point, I feel like they don't overreach. There's nothing in it that ever breaks it too much where you're like, they shouldn't have done that.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
You know, that's, I feel like, a big tempting thing when you're in a editing room or sitting in front of a effects program. And I feel like they handle what they can handle and do it well. And they don't go too far enough where you're like, you lost me. You know?
Yeah. I think there's a few of those like CG squibs and things like that, where it maybe is just like a little much, where you can kind of see that it's like, okay, there's definitely a lot of computer gunfire happening here. But none of it is jarring or really takes you out of the moment.
No, there's no like somebody getting sliced in half in a really poorly digitized way.
No,
you know, where it looks horrible. Like even the axes in the shoulder and all the knife hits read as, you know, as impactful.
Yeah,
they don't necessarily look fake.
No. And I think, you know, the other really smart thing is that they do a really good job in this movie of building up with each successive sequence. Like, there's a long time where, like, Mad Dog's character doesn't really do anything in the movie, but you keep hearing about what a nightmare he is. And then the first time you actually see him go at someone, which is that fight with Joe Taslim, like, you understand why they waited to deploy him in a major way and why it's mostly just been these other thugs with machetes up to this point. Because once he gets going, it's just like, holy shit.
The stuff with him was so muted that I actually was like guessing at which of, because they have that pretty good description of the mobster and his two henchmen.
Yeah.
At the beginning, like guessing at who was actually who, because for a while I thought that like maybe the guy who ends up being the boss might have been the Mad Dog guy because of that execution scene at the beginning. You know, it's just like, okay, this guy clearly revels in gratuitous cruelty so much that like maybe he's the guy who's off his rocker. And maybe it's, you know, actually the younger guy who's the boss. Or, I mean, obviously it becomes clear eventually once that guy goes off. But, like, they really hold him in reserve for so long.
Yeah, you know, you don't deploy your coolest guy until the right moment. And they're very smart about it.
Even some of their more muted, very quiet, non-action scenes are just gut-wrenching, like the one in the wall when he has the machete through the wall.
Oh my god, dude.
And it's just like, you know, nothing is happening. No, nobody's moving, and it's one of the harder scenes to watch as his face is pinned against the machete in the wall.
And he has to put his hand up and, like, touch the blade so that the blood comes off when he pulls the blade out. And, yeah, it's just, like, little details like that are kind of incredible.
It's you know, it's, yeah, right. It makes you just wince, and you're not even you're just watching a guy stand there.
Yep.
Yeah, it's well done.
So, last couple of things here I'll just mention. We mentioned Joe Taslim, who plays Sergeant Jaka in this movie. Joe Taslim, if you know him from U.S. stuff, you've probably seen him in Fast and the Furious 6, Star Trek Beyond, and the most recent Mortal Kombat movie where he plays Sub-Zero. This was kind of his first big role. Prior to this, he had done a tiny bit of acting, but he was also on Indonesia's national judo team from 1997 to 2009. And we also have Donny Alamsia as Andy. I did not know him super well, but he is apparently a staple of Indonesian cinema. And he plays the less crazy of the henchmen, and also the brother of Iko Uwais, Rama, who we kind of, this is sort of the one big plot twist in the movie is the oh hey, by the way, this drug lord guy is also your brother, your estranged brother. So when this movie came out in the U.S., they did an entirely different score for it. The original score was in the Indonesian release, and I think a lot of the international releases, but in the U.S., they tapped Mike Shinoda from Linkin Park to work on the score, which is the one that I believe in the version we watched is the one we had.
Yes, I was a little surprised to see his name come up at the end.
I don't think it's bad. The original score is good in its own way, too, but I think that, you know, the Shinoda-ness of it is not overbearing, and it does not, like, feel like it is intruding on the action, which is always the thing I'm worried about when they go and they get some U.S. guy to redo a score of a foreign film.
When I first watched this, I started, it had the dub on, the English dub, and I'll say I got about one line read into it and was like, oh no, that cannot, that
that's
mix
not the
on
way
that thing, it's kind of awful.
What time is it, hon?
It's early. You should be asleep.
I told you to wake me.
You have to rest. Both of you. I love you.
I love you too.
Wait till Daddy comes home, okay?
I don't know if you guys even listened to a little bit.
No.
It sounded recorded poorly, like, because there's a pretty long bit before anybody even talks, and the mix on that, even with like the punching and stuff, sounded off. And as soon as I switched over to the Indonesian track and realized I was on the dub, it was like a million times better.
Oh yeah, 100%. And so I don't. The dub may have gotten some theatrical release, but that's not the version I saw in theaters, I don't believe.
So even on the Indonesian voice track, it's the same score?
Yeah, I think there might be a Blu-ray release that has both. The one I have doesn't, I as far as I know, doesn't have both. So that was just the track. Okay. But again, the Indonesian score is just good in its own way. Like, it's not, like, radically better. It's, you know, it's just different musical approaches. And this movie was a success, both in Indonesia and in the U.S., as I said. It did very well in Indonesia. It made about $4 million in the U.S., which doesn't sound like a lot, but again, it's at its peak, it was only in about 800 theaters. And on a $1 million budget, it made about 10 times that internationally. So I would say by all accounts, it was a success. And they went on to make the sequel, The Raid 2, which was, which actually incorporated a bunch of the stuff from that movie, Barandal, that they initially intended to make. And then there's also apparently a remake at some point that is still in development, a U.S. version that is being produced by Michael Bay's production company and is supposed to debut on Netflix.
Why?
I don't know, because it was successful, and why not have Hollywood do it, I guess?
Because there's people who will go see that won't go see a foreign film.
Yep.
That makes me upset.
It happens all the time.
Yeah. Ugh. Honestly, the most shocking thing is that it's taken this long to actually happen. It's been in kind of development hell since at least 2015. But it sounds like the Netflix picked up the distribution rights, and that is actually going to happen at some point soon. So,
but like, what is this movie, like 10 years old?
2011 is when it came out in Indonesia. I believe 2012 is when it came out in the U.S.
Like, not even that old. Like, no. You don't even need a remake.
No. I agree.
I mean, it usually happens faster than that, you know? Jeez. It's like, you know, it happened with, like, Let the Right One In.
Yes.
Old Boy.
Huh. And rarely probably. Does it ever actually improve on what was there before.
Hmm. Yeah, no, it's, again, it's just, I think there's just a wider audience that will more readily go see a movie in their native shot and, you know, acted in their native language than they will a foreign film.
It's like reverse Transmorphers. It's mm-hmm. like, you know, the bigger budget, more expensive, worse version of a movie.
It's like halfway through this movie, my girlfriend was just like, you know what, like international movies are way better than anything that's coming out over here.
I fundamentally agree with you. And again, I think that, you know, there's really not much you can do in a different version of this movie that would somehow improve it.
Yeah, man.
And again, Dread exists. In a way, it is kind of a riff on what this movie is doing, but doing its own thing. And I think that's why Dread is, well, despite being compared to this movie constantly, like, still viewed very favorably, because it's just a similar premise and nothing else.
How did the Raid 2 do?
The Raid 2 also did well. Yeah, like, okay. And some people say it's better than the first one. I don't necessarily, I mean, I haven't watched The Raid 2 since it came out. I really liked it. I don't know if I would necessarily say it's better than the first one, but it is really good.
My most enduring impression of The Raid 2 is Dave Lang's scale of Raid 2s that he was using
yes.
for a while on Twitter to rate other movies. You know, this movie is 4 Raid 2s out of 5.
Yep. The Raid 2 is incredible. I'm not discounting it at all. I think the Raid 1 has a real efficiency to it that I really admire.
Hmm.
And a lot of that efficiency is in the plot, which really, as I said before, is just kind of a thing that gets you from scene to scene for people to fight. The setup here, the titular Raid is being executed by the Indonesian Brimob, which is essentially their special operations police force. A SWAT team, if you will. And they're being sent to a tower block in Jakarta that is under complete control of the drug lord Tama Riyadi, who both has his own gang residing there and has also invited a bunch of scattered criminals and drug addicts to come and live there under his protection. Apparently rival mobs have attempted to break into this place and have all been killed. In this point, there's an early morning raid by the SWAT team. They are going to finally take this guy down, quote unquote. And so the team, including some rookie officers, head in there. And wouldn't you know, things go haywire almost immediately.
Yeah, it's a really efficient setup at the beginning of this. Like, you get the short prologue of Rama, the main character, training at 4 a.m. or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Extremely boilerplate scene to establish that he has a pregnant wife.
Uh-huh. I'll be back soon.
This
I'll
man has a family, damn it.
Yeah.
And then there's this weird scene with his father, who has no lines, I don't think, right?
No.
Where he basically just, what does he just says? I'll bring him back.
I'll bring him back,
yeah.
Which obviously you come to understand what that means. Maybe we'll talk about it more when we get to the part where that's made clearer.
But I think
the first setup is a little weird in retrospect to me.
The first time I watched this movie, I thought he was talking about someone else on the SWAT team. Like, maybe there was, like, a younger brother or someone who was on the team with him that he was like, I'll bring him back alive, you know, like, hey, you know, I'll make sure I'll protect him or whatever. But then, you know, when they kind of don't address that for a while, I was like, maybe that's not what they mean. I wasn't really sure.
Or I thought...
Well,
I thought it was that older guy who's there, the kind of... The guy, the senior, whatever, I don't know what his role is.
He's a lieutenant. He's the one who's sort of in charge of this operation. At least that's what we think at the outset.
Yeah, I thought maybe he was referring to him. Like,
there's a couple confusing things about the plot to me that only become confusing in retrospect. The one with the father is, why did he expect to find his brother here? He seems pretty surprised to see him there.
Well,
I think they set it up like we would dug through some records or something. And
well, so the one
when he first encounters him,
the
right?
person who's surprised to see him is the brother when he sees him on the monitor, when he's like in the middle of the gun battle. I think he says at one point straight up that like, when this mission was being planned, I saw your photo up on the wall, and I said that's why he wanted to get in on this mission so he could try to bring him back.
I forgot about the photo part. Yeah. Okay, that makes sense. Because he says, you know, there were no links to you. Like, all they had was a first name.
Yeah.
Right.
And a photo.
You know, 6 years with no word, and this is where I find you, you know? It's right. But yeah, I forgot about the photo part.
Yeah, so he is he's part of the Special Operations Group, but he was not originally part of this mission, and he requested to become part of the mission for this, so.
Rookie cop.
Yep.
Rookie cop.
And so once they're in there, things seem to go great for the first, let's say, 10 minutes where they're just clearing floors. You know, they're grabbing residents. They meet that guy at the beginning who, I'm going to say, the first time I watched this movie, I was convinced he was a plant. Like, he was there to set them up. The husband who's bringing drugs, like prescription drugs, home to his sick wife who lives there. But no, he is actually just like the one good Samaritan in this entire building. And, you know, it seems like they've got this place under control.
The guy was dweebish enough that I took him at face value.
Yeah.
I was like, this guy is too much of a bookworm to actually be a criminal.
I kind of took it as the vehicle to show that Rama is, you know, it cares about the people. He's not there to just be, he's got a conscience, you know, just to set his character
he's
up.
He's not there to slash and burn.
Also to show that there are people here who are not terrible gangsters. There are, like, actual normal people civilians who are down on their luck that live in this place as well. Real quick before we get into this, I just wanted to say that scene in the SWAT van driving to this place, like, that's the real efficiency of the setup to
me.
Totally. It's just Joe Taslim sounding tough as nails, barking this entire mission description at these guys as they drive and clutch their rifles, you know?
And it gives you a good sense of who these characters are, or at least the ones that you're going to spend any meaningful time with.
Okay, listen up. Our target is Tom Ariadne. I'm sure most of you know who I'm talking about. This man has become something of a legend in the underworld. Pushers. Gangs. Killers. They all respect him like a god. For the past 10 years, his building has been a no-go zone for police. I don't care how big he is or who's behind him. He must be stopped. That enterprising fuck has been renting out rooms like it's an apartment to any low-life piece of shit looking to keep his head down. Our mission is simple. We go in, and we take him out.
Yes, sir!
Now, Tom isn't alone in this. Intelligence reports of an in-house narcotics lab. Naturally, this means he has more than enough muscle to protect his investment. He also has 2 trusted guards. One a fucking mad dog. A maniac of feet and fists that would tear down walls for his boss. The other, Andy. The brains of Thomas' business. He keeps mad dog in check. But don't be fooled. Given the opportunity, he will put bullets in you.
And outlines all the stakes as well. Outlines, like, who this drug lord is, like, how fortified this building is, who his henchmen are, like, everything about the whole situation is just set up in, like, 2 minutes. Also, it's intercut with the mobster executing those guys, which also really gives you a pretty good sense of how brutal this movie's going to be.
Yeah.
And I'll say the third thing it does, which are 2 great things, sets up the stakes, sets up how bad and evil this villain is. And the third thing is hand waves away all the questions you have about why are these guys, why now, why is this even happening? Because the rookie or one of the is like, why are we doing this now? And they're just like, why not? Like, let's make
a
movie.
Gotta do it eventually.
Yeah, it's basically because we want to have a good action movie. Stop asking questions. Here we go. Here comes the car.
I want to give a special shout out here to Ray Sahitapi, who plays Tama, the drug lord. He has a real wild card energy that I feel like is exactly what this movie needed, where it's like he's not some slick gangster. He's not some dude who is like, you know, who seems particularly invested in anything other than just whatever his whim at that moment is. It gives you a real good flavor for, like, how unpredictable and how fucked up this dude is, especially in that moment where he just grabs that the claw side of that hammer. It's like, well, gotta finish this execution. It's like,
runs out of bullets, shooting 5 guys in the back of the head, and opens a drawer, and instead of grabbing more bullets that are right there, he grabs the hammer to do it himself. That's why I was not convinced at first that he was the boss, because that's so against the type of, like, reserved, calculating crime lord who has minions that do all the dirty work, you know? Like, Like, this guy clearly reveling in the killing himself was just so not what you expect out of the mastermind.
There's like a muted violence to his character.
And paranoia too, because you see that in all the CCTV cameras everywhere, and the way he just glues his face to it during this entire process, and how convinced he is that he's being betrayed.
There's just something that's just like, I got a little like Javier Bardem, you know, No Country for Old Men. Just like, oh, violence can happen at any time here. Like, there's no hesitation.
I absolutely could see this dude stalking around with an air compressor to fuck dudes up if he felt like it.
Yes, like, just like, oh, he's not wincing.
No.
You know, there's that lack of, like, you know, that was horrible. It's like, no, he's just going to claw hammer this guy. Right,
yeah.
Exactly.
So once they're in there, as I said, it starts moving relatively efficiently. They zip tie a lot of dudes as they move along. They secure some floors, but when they get to the sixth floor, they are unfortunately spotted by one of the kids who are being used as scouts in the building, and they are made. And I will say the moment of violence that comes from that, where the kid gets gunned down, and also the incredible shot of the dude just staring down. The audio.
The other kid.
Well, the other kid, but also the part where he's just staring at the fucking the communicator, like the
buzzer
where someone had just clearly yelled police, and he just knows that they're fucked now. Is
so
great.
It is awesome because it's a very long shot too, and everybody knows, the audience, they know,
everybody
clenches the drug lord
instinctively.
Knows. Yeah. So I have a question for you guys watching this. They would have been made whether that kid hit the buzzer or not, right? There were enough CCTV, like, it could, Rama prevents one of the guys from basically offing that kid. He's like, put your guns down. It's a kid. What are we doing here? And then the kid runs off. If they had taken that kid out, they would, it's not like he caused this to happen, which is what they make it seem like, right? Like, oh, your mercy on this kid caused this thing to happen. But later on, you see him, he has security cameras all over the place.
Yeah.
He's been watching them the entire time.
And, you know, at the end, I mean, it's unclear if he's just talking shit or if he's serious, but he claims that he got the tip that they were coming to begin with.
Well, that's the other thing is that, so, I mean, we'll get into this more, but like the twist, you know, with the corrupt police captain is that it's not that they're there to execute Tama, which, I mean, that's what they're, you know, that's what he seems to think is what they're actually doing. But in reality, like, it is essentially, like, it's an execution for this cop and, you know, any related cops, because supposedly his superiors have dropped a dime on him.
Yeah, that, I felt like that maybe could have been laid out a little more clearly. Like, is the implication that this guy is too much of a do-gooder and that's why his bosses want him gone?
Is that what it was?
I don't think it was that. I think so we're talking about Wahyu, who is the older lieutenant guy who is sort of in charge of this raid. The implication seems to be that he is corrupt like a bunch of his bosses, and his bosses ordered him to put together this raid to finally take this guy out, presumably to clean up their own mess so that they could essentially hide whatever, you know, whatever dirty business that, like, Tama might have records of or might be able to implicate them in. But it also, like, the way Tama made it sound at the end is that, in reality, they just kind of wanted to get rid of Wahyu, and so if they had successfully killed or captured Tama, you know, whatever, no sweat off their back, fine, he did the job. But if they hadn't, then at least they got rid of this guy that they no longer trust.
Right, they would erase the slate completely.
Yeah.
Basically, they wanted them both gone. He does say, the mob boss does say at some point, too, when they're talking about reinforcements and stuff, and they're like, there are going to be no reinforcements.
Nobody knows we're here.
This is just like any other hit. Well, the mob boss is like, it's like any other hit when somebody comes in here. They're not sending reinforcements. We'll clean up this mess. We'll kind of erase it. Assault on Precinct 19 style. 13 style. And, you know, nobody's going to know, which does make it sound like this is not a sanctioned.
Oh, extremely. It is extremely not sanctioned.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I guess the setup just maybe seemed a little confusing or implausible to me, because there's obviously, well, specifically because the mobster says that the heads of the police like having him around.
Yeah.
So, like, there are a lot more efficient ways to get rid of this one problem lieutenant and not risk your golden goose, right? Because he he flat out says, like, I know who to pay and I know how much to pay. You know, mm-hmm. it's like, from his perspective, they don't want him dead, so why even put him at risk? But anyway, whatever.
Yeah, yeah, that part.
Action movies have had flimsier premises. Oh, yes, certainly. For yeah. sure.
Yeah, I think the only real issue there is that, like, they wait until the last possible minute to actually throw that last detail at you. So all you really know is that a corrupt cop probably got a bunch of people killed here accidentally. Yeah. But you don't really know the whys of it until the very end, and they kind of just sort of toss that line off in toward the end. But the, once they're spotted, I mean, they're fucked. Like, everything starts, like, the ruthless efficiency with which the gangsters start undoing everything they have done on those first five floors, sniping the guys in the downstairs, the spotters downstairs, like, fucking taking out the guys in the van. You know, like that one dude slipping out of his zip tie and then just macheteing that cop when he's not looking is just fucking, it is, this is like 5 minutes and so many people die in this amount of time.
Yeah, this is that whole kind of extended fight sequence that I kept talking about early on. Like, this is basically the kind of jumping off point for the real action.
Yeah.
Because it's also when the boss figures out what is going on and makes the call, like, hey, you know what to do. And, like, the snipers
the neighbors,
take those guys out.
Says.
Yeah.
I
thought the sniper part was really interesting because they stay on the snipers throughout them, the guys getting shot.
I'll take the one on the left. You take the one on the right.
Okay.
Let him scream. Exterior secure.
And then they don't cut to them getting shot. They just keep staying on the snipers when he says, let them scream.
You just see the aftermath. That's it.
Well, you don't even see that because you see the guy go to the window after that.
Yeah.
And then so you only see it from the other cop's point of view, which I thought was a really interesting, again, this is kind of morbid, but interesting creative choice. I feel like in most movies, you would see the two guys get hit and then see somebody
totally.
Go check on them. And you do not. You're like, I assume they just shot guys on the ground and you don't realize how methodical and surgeon-like their plan is here until that guy goes to the window and he just gets off.
Like so much shit goes wrong so fast that like it really creates this creeping sense of dread of just, oh wow, these guys are properly fucked.
Yes.
Because like, yeah, not only do those guys get sniped, but then the other guy is stupid enough to go to the window and then he gets sniped.
Yep.
It's also when they neutralize the van.
Yes.
Which right. is their only means of escape and like, it's three guys just unloading into the windshield of this van, like completely just so over the top.
And again, mostly what you see there is the blood splatter hitting the glass as the, you know, the bullet holes start like going through the glass. You only see a couple of very quick shots of the guys inside getting shot. Like they don't luxuriate on that. It's more the sort of like perspective of the guys doing the shooting.
Last night was the worst fucking game I have ever seen. You didn't miss much. I saw the whole thing. I don't know what the fuck they were thinking.
Well, they go inside enough to show that this guy is a pincushion.
I mean, again, if it wasn't that, the blood splatter would have certainly communicated yeah. that.
And when do we get this, the rock elevated position?
They have the high ground.
Scene? Yeah. So, is that here?
So that's around here, because this is when they're on the stairwell, and this is around the time Tama gets on the radio or, you know, the in-building communication. Is just like, hey, anyone want free rent? Go kill these guys.
Oh,
a permanent resident of this building.
Free of charge.
And please, please enjoy yourself.
Lieutenant, put a call in. We need backup.
No, we can handle this.
With all due respect, sir, they'll burn us along with a truck if we stay here. Now make the call.
I can't just...
What do you mean you can't?
We're not... This isn't...
Who else knows we're here? What the fuck have you brought us into, Lieutenant?
We're alone here.
It's... Yeah. It's crazy, man. It's literally, like, the space of, I don't know, 12 minutes or something that all of this happens. Like, the shootout between... They get a lot of mileage out of that stairwell, central column...
Yes.
...kind of thing throughout the movie, but... That shootout between floors there, the sniper stuff, the van getting blown away straight into the apartment fight where they start chopping the hole in the floor and everything, like, all of that is happening at the same time. It is so damn much to take in.
And I really, really, okay, so, like, as hectic as the gunfight on that stairwell is, the thing that really struck me, especially watching this time, was just the feeling of just gloom and dread as you can see, like... Rama look up and see that there's like the outline of these four guys up there, but he can't really place exactly where they are. And likewise, they can't see them from downstairs, but the second a muzzle flash goes off, they are revealed.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I love that shot and just the feeling of it as you are like seeing it's like, oh no, oh no, they did the thing they could not do.
It's almost like, you know, it's pretty dim with a lot of muzzle flash going off too. It's almost like from Alien. It's like a scene from Aliens where it's just like they're you know, a couple of Marines mm-hmm. swarmed by a bunch of aliens just firing off randomly, and you know this squad of 20 people who went in, there's going to be like six survivors for the rest of them. You're thinning out your cast here pretty quickly.
Yeah, I mean, I think they get down to about six or seven guys at this point from the SWAT team. And we have gotten down to where we need to take a break. So we will be right back. And we are back, and we are down to, let's just say, a six or seven dudes left from the original raid squad. And this is where... Things really get fucking crazy as they start hacking their way through the building, trying to find some measure of safety. This is the scene you were talking about, Brad, where they start hacking through the floor and are just, like, trashing apartments while fighting dudes and just swarms and swarms of guys.
It's, yeah, because, I mean, like, just the residents who want to not pay rent anymore are swarming them at this point, and you start realizing how cutthroat everybody's going to be in this, because once they jump down in there and there's a bunch of unarmed guys... charging them, they are just mowing them down with their assault rifles.
This is inside where this is also the part where I'm like, oh, this is where the guys are coming to kill them. Now
yes.
I realize
now, like, you know what kind of movie we're doing here.
But there's a shot here, I think it's this part where, again, that subtle use of CG where somebody again goes to the window and they get peppered with bullets.
Yes.
And they do this kind of nice shot where the camera's actually outside the building and then tracks in with this person as they're pulling them away. And it's like a very, I don't know what the right word is, like very sophisticated, mature shot for this type of movie on this budget. It's
totally.
It works really well.
It's really creative the way they deploy some of these shots, which just don't look like standard action fare.
Yeah, and again, it doesn't overreach. It doesn't look like the outside of the building's fake. I just remember it being like, oh, that's more complicated than it looks.
Yes.
To do that shot. Nobody flew a camera in there.
No. But again, when they choose to deploy that stuff, it's always in really interesting spots because it's not stuff that is like, here's your big showpiece action sequence. It's like, sometimes it's just for these little throwaway shots that in any other movie, it would literally, all you'd see is a guy riddled with bullets from the perspective of him from the side. That's it. You know?
Yeah, right.
So
yeah, it's good.
But they get in here, and this is probably not the best fight in the movie, but it is the first one that really signals what you have in store for you coming up here, where they kind of, you know, a few guys die, but they manage to fend off most of the dudes. They build that jury-rigged bomb with the fridge, and this is eventually where I think the group starts to get split up.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, this is, you know, this is more of a desperate gun battle. You don't really get... Like, if you didn't know this was a martial arts movie, you wouldn't know it was a martial arts movie.
Yeah,
you know what
totally.
I mean? Like, there's no hint of the absolutely insane choreography to come here, because it is nothing but people dodging bullets and shooting each other and stuff.
Yeah.
But it very much sets up how desperate this whole thing is.
So here we get, you know, again, I think the jury rig bomb bit is fucking great, especially the deftness with which he just whips that tank out of the sink. It is definitely a moment of, oh, this dude fucking knows what he's doing in a way that, like, maybe none of these other guys do.
Yeah. Which, like, it's just such pure action hero that this guy's a rookie and there's just no justification for why he is so goddamn good at all this. he just is.
Yeah. Dude just knows his martial arts and he's just very resourceful, you know? But yes, this is where the group split up. Jaka, Dagu, and Wahyu, the older guy, they move down to the fifth floor, while Rama and Bowo, who is the injured guy that he is sort of carting around for a while, they move upward because they want to find the apartment of Gofar, who is the guy we saw at the very beginning who was tending to his sick wife. Because, you know, again, Rama believes very seriously that this guy is a decent dude and he will help them out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. This is also where you get the machete crew.
Yes.
Which, who is that main guy? He's credited in the credits. He's named as, like, priest, I want to say.
The actor is credited, or his name is Alfredus Godfred. And I'm not sure if his character actually has a name. It's just he's the leader of the machete gang.
Yeah, the character name, like I said, in the credits is priest. On Wikipedia, he says a priest who hunts the surviving officers. But there's no, like, religious...
No.
Imagery there in the character. I mean, unless he's just a priest of hacking people up with a machete.
I mean, he's really good at it and dedicated.
But I mean, specifically, it's the part where he kills one of the residents of the building with the machete, who is crawling on the floor, injured.
Mm-hmm.
Like, clearly, indiscriminately, is just going to mop up every trace of what's been going on here, no matter who it is.
Yeah, these guys are good sub-bosses. Like, if you are building this as a video game, like, that is definitely, like, a good second or third level boss. And, like, that guy is, you know, I mean, eventually he is totally outdone by Mad Dog, but he has a real good middle-of-the-movie level of menace.
Yeah, he gets his, like, warriors come out and play when they're hiding in the bathroom, and, yeah, he's good. He's scary.
Yeah. And so eventually they do make their way to the apartment and, you know, they convince Gofar to hide them as they are hunting through this floor and getting ready to kill them.
Hang on. I'm sorry. I have to stop you because we get our first real martial arts reveal right before he makes his way in there.
It's true. Yes.
Like, that's where you get this first fight in the hallway with Rama.
And this was great.
It's bananas.
Where, again, like, I knew that there were martial arts in this movie. But obviously you don't really see it until this point, which is like a third or more into the movie. But like, holy fucking shit, man. It's like...
So many knees get fucked up in this, man.
Well, A, the brutality of some of the kills here. But B, also just like, it's like some of the best fight choreography I think I've ever seen. Like, it's so incredibly fluid.
It's really fluid. Everything lands with incredible impact. Like, the kills are brutal, but in some cases, the people they leave alive are even more brutal because the injuries they leave on them are fucked.
That thigh.
Yes.
One. You know the one?
Yep.
Oh my God. That
runs the knife
all the way up the leg. Yeah.
Stabs the guy at the top of the thigh and just drags the knife all the way down to the knee. Like, that might have been the more hardest thing to watch in the movie for me.
There's a lot of knives in knees and legs and places where you are going to have permanent injury afterward, and the fact that he left those folks alive after the fact is almost more brutal than the people he killed.
There's also, and the scene ends with this really amazing, like, extended sequence after he's killed everybody in the hall of one last guy on the other side of an apartment door, like, pumped up but scared, like, trying to reload this revolver and burst out to shoot him. And then that whole thing lasts like 5 seconds. Like, they build up for like a solid minute to this guy loading the gun and getting ready to go out. And as soon as he comes out, like, it takes Rama less than 5 seconds to subdue him and shoot him through the chin. And then they cut away.
It's just, I mean, again, it is a great demonstration of how capable this character is. And also just the first real, like you said, the first real indication that, like, oh, this is what the rest of this movie is going to be like.
Yeah. I found the fighting just like mesmerizing in this movie.
Yeah. No, and again, this is Iko Uwai, and this is this is all the work of him and Yayan Ruyan, the Mad Dog character. Like, they choreographed all this stuff.
It's really good.
Yeah,
it's really the choreography is there's so much of it.
Yes.
There's so
much. Some of these fights go on way longer than you would ever expect.
They seem so complicated and there's so much. I'll say this about the hallway thing, too. Those people in the hallway he leaves, they're there for, like, the rest of the movie.
Those bodies
do not
disappear.
Through that hallway. Yeah, and they're just writhing on the ground the rest of the movie.
God. And, yeah, okay. So, again, as I mentioned, this is where, you know, they find their way into the apartment. They hide them there, but as this is going on, the priest and crew are hunting for them on this floor, crashing through doors, looking for them, and when they finally make their way into the apartment, they are hidden in the wall, and they decide, the priest dude decides, hey, why don't I just start stabbing this wall? Because this looks like a weird wall.
Looks like a weird wall. Why does this wall bump out like this? Shouldn't bump out like this.
Yeah. This is so fucking tense, man.
No,
hey,
please
stop!
Don't.
God damn it! This is all I've got, you fucking punks! Hey! Fuck you! Leave us alone!
Hey, I'm getting real tired of your shit.
Look around! There's no one here!
Don't fucking question me, friend.
I told you the truth! Now leave us alone!
So, yeah, he stamps through the wall like 4 times, obviously missing kind of like a magician doing a knife in a box trick, and then is not close to Rama's face, in his face, in his cheek.
Just a flesh wound.
And he leaves the machete in the wall as somebody else distracts him so that
Yeah,
Gofar
distracts
pinned.
Him because they're trashing his apartment at the same time, and he's like complaining about it.
Hey! You want me to slice that bitch up? Well, do you? Then sit down! Okay, let's go.
Which is just... man, it's hard to watch.
It is.
Rama pinned with this knife, machete.
Unable to make a sound.
In about, I don't know, let's call it a centimeter or so in his cheek. It's rough.
It's one
He's
of
got
the
nowhere
better
to go.
It's one of the better employees of CG, like, injury in this movie. Like, they do a really good job of making it feel like that blade is really in there.
Yeah, like, he can't back his head up anymore. He's got nothing.
Yeah.
No place to go. Ugh.
And again, the part where he just grabs the blade as it is coming out just to make sure the blood stain is not there is just some real good... you are the most capable motherfucker there is kind of illustration here.
Well, then the second these guys are gone, the guy who has been shot in the ear, you find out, has also been shot in the gut.
Yes.
And they use what?
A butter knife.
Is that a butter knife?
I think it's a butter knife. It's like one of those flat ones.
To dig the bullet out.
What does he say? He says, go look again. Yeah. This is all I can find. Go look
Do
again.
Do you
want to
use a spoon? Because I got a spoon.
He says, fuck you, look again.
Yeah.
Quick, I need a knife or something sharp.
Okay.
Go!
Hey, you're gonna be okay. But you have to stay calm. I just have to patch you up. Hold on, focus.
All I have is this.
Yeah, fuck you, look again!
I swear it's all I got. What about a spoon or some chopsticks?
Fuck it, just do it!
Yeah, dude, he is not in good shape, but somehow he is one of the only people that actually survives this movie, so good on him. Mm. And then, yeah, this is around this time is where we kind of move back to the other crew. And this is where they run afoul of Mad Dog not too long after this.
Yeah, you get there's the elevator scene with the estranged brother, mm-hmm. which is confusing when you're watching it the first time.
You don't know that he's a brother at this point. Obviously, like there's something going on. Like when the boss sends him to go look for these guys, he's insistent that he goes alone.
Yeah.
Yes.
Like absolutely insistent, but he's like, no, you're taking help, and then he kills the help in the elevator with a knife.
Yeah.
And there's clearly something going on.
The only thing that there's something going on there is that one shot of him watching the CCTV during the gun battle where he sees Rama there and like kind of stares him down in a real way that makes you think there's something significant there.
Yeah.
And this is also where Rama ends up having the fight with the machete gang out in the hallway because he gets spotted very quickly after leaving the apartment.
I really thought like, okay, there's going to be some loophole, something is going to get him out of having to fight four guys in tight quarters who all have machetes, but nope, he just fights them and he actually beats all of them.
Yep. Yeah.
But not in a way that makes you think, oh, this is easy for him. Like, they put him through the ringer.
No.
Though he mostly
the door jam part?
Yeah, he mostly avoids being stabbed.
Yeah, this is where he kills the one guy on the broken door.
Ugh.
And then takes the priest right out the window.
Yeah, on that fire escape.
I'm not sure how many stories they fall, at least three or four from the looks of things. I think he kind of lands on the priest, right?
Yes, he lands on him and uses him basically as a cushion.
Yeah.
And they do a pretty good job of making him look like he did not walk away from that unscathed.
Well, and again, like they start shooting at him from above, from below, like right as soon as they land, too. So he has to basically dive through a window almost instantly after that.
Yeah.
But he seems pretty messed up.
He is very sort of shell shocked.
As he should be.
Yeah.
That's a fucked up thing to have to do, man.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. And then we get to the point you were talking about of Joe Taslim versus Mad Dog. Although this is where you get the. Really get the breakdown of what's going on here, that the lieutenant has sold all these guys out.
They're gone.
We don't know that yet.
Think about it, Chucker. One's a cripple, the other a rookie. They didn't stand a chance. Now I'm sorry, but we're not going up there just to find their dead bodies. Listen to me, you prick! When it comes to the lives of my men, it will be wise for you to shut the fuck up! You want to talk about risking lives? Well, you already risked theirs. And now I own yours. Who ordered this?
What?
Well, it sure as shit wasn't you. No one leads the charge when it comes to their dirty work. Careful, Chucka. Remember your rank.
Rank?
Rank counts for shit now. Once we make it out of here, you'll be mopping puddles of piss in a prison cell for the rest of your life. We're not here to do good. We're here to make someone rich. I'm asking you, one last time, who ordered this hit?
Another time, maybe. I'll take my chances here first.
Suit yourself. We're going back up there, and we're going to find them. And only then do we leave. Any objections? Thought not. Everyone ready? Move.
And it's, you know, this is also where Rama does have his moment with his brother, where they meet up briefly and speak and talk about, you know, hey, we're brothers, dad wants you home, that kind of stuff. And he's like, nope, I'm good at this.
Don't they check for any links before they send you?
They've got nothing. Nothing on record about you, just your first name. No one knows shit about us. I almost fucking choked when they pinned your photo on the board. 6 years with no contact, and this is how I find you?
You have to leave this place. Now.
I can't. Not without my team.
What?
You heard me.
I don't think you realize the situation you're in.
Oh, I understand fine. I'm not the one living here.
Don't worry about me, I'm fine. Next time you want to talk, pick up the phone.
Hey! I spent the last 24 hours listening to my best friends talk about killing you. I'm the one who can get you out of here safely. Without a pair of fucking handcuffs around your wrists.
Wait, what's that, huh? You're getting me out? You're the one who needs saving last I checked. My guys are almost done collecting these.
Fuck you, just do what I say!
And go where? Home?
If I was such a disappointment to him then... Think about how proud he's gonna be now that I am who I am.
He just wants you home. We all do.
You don't get it. That ain't me anymore. This is. Just because you see what I do is wrong, doesn't mean I can't be good at it. It's the one thing I know how to do. I fucking own it. No, Rama. I won't go back to who I was.
You're gonna be an uncle.
What?
Yeah, a boy. Due in 2 months.
You tell me this now, because you expect me to leave.
I told you because you're my fucking brother! Think about what you're doing! If you stay here, you'll be fucking dead before that boy is born! Haven't you thought about that? I've thought about it. Every day since I was given this assignment, and it fucking terrifies me!
This is fucking ridiculous.
You should leave. I don't have much time.
At least change your clothes before you go back out there.
No, this fits me just fine.
I'm good at being a criminal, so I'm doing that now.
I really like that line of, like, sort of like, just because you think what I do is wrong doesn't mean I can't be good at it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just wanted to mention that I really liked this scene of, what is the Joe Taslim character's name?
Jaka.
Him chewing the lieutenant out, like, you actually get a sense of, like, oh, this guy is, like, really serious about protecting the lives of his men. Like, he takes this work and the camaraderie extremely seriously.
Yep.
Of, we are not leaving until we go get our guys.
Like, 100%.
Like, where the lives of my men are concerned, like, do not fuck with me. You know, like, I see what's, like, just the whole, I see what's going on here, we're not here on a mission, we're here to make somebody rich.
Yes.
Type stuff. Like, I was really surprised because I've only seen him in Mortal Kombat and he is so goddamn menacing in that movie.
Yes.
Like, so good at being incredibly sinister that I just kind of assumed he was probably an actor who maybe is typecast as a villain.
Well, so if I remember correctly, in The Night Comes for Us, which again is one Taslim and Uwai are both in, I think they kind of flip the script where Taslim is the good guy and Uwai is sort of the bad guy in that movie, if I remember correctly. Yeah.
Interesting. But I was surprised to see him as this kind of unalloyed, like, good character here, morally good.
Like a hard ass, but, like, definitely, like, morally on the good side of things. Absolutely.
Right.
Well, and I'll give credit here to Pierre Gruno as Wayu, the older guy. Like, he feels like a dude who is definitely, like, a corrupt scumbag, but he's not, like, he's not, like, fucking Paul Reiser in Aliens, you know? Like, he's not a total slime ball. He's just an old, beat-up dude who is clearly a corrupt asshole, and he does probably feel pretty fucked up about all this, but not enough to get away from his self-interest in trying to just survive this at cost of whoever else is necessary.
Yeah.
He's also extremely out of his league here.
Oh.
Out of his depth.
He's 100%.
He's mostly useless.
And clearly past his prime as well.
Though I do like when they finally make him fight a little bit at the end, his version of fighting is just like hardcore garbage wrestling. Like, he just grabs trash cans and chairs and just breaks them over everyone constantly.
Fucking drops a filing cabinet on a guy.
Yeah. That is a believable way that guy could fight.
Yeah. I really like this juxtaposition, though, of Jaka kind of going off on this guy from a moral high ground, leading right into the fight with Mad Dog.
Yes.
Because, like, going from realizing, like, oh, this character is a pretty good guy, to watching him get fucked up so bad is, like, pretty gut-wrenching.
Puts up a good fight,
like,
though.
Yeah. Yeah, but very much by the end of it, like, when he died, my girlfriend was just like, oh, man, I really wanted him to live.
Yeah. But they give him, like, a real significant death in this movie. Yeah. Like, the fight with Mad Dog, one, is an incredible illustration of, like, oh, this little dude is exactly as badass as they make him out to be. But they also don't let Joe Taslim just get his ass kicked. Like, he gets his licks in.
I mean, I'd say it seems like throughout the fight, it could have gone either way, which I think you don't even appreciate until Mad Dog is fighting the two brothers at the same time about how good Taslim must have been to take him on one-on-one, right?
Yeah. And, yeah,
this guy's like the Sith Lord at this point. You know? Yeah. Like, he is,
it's,
you know,
fucking crazy how just like unkillable he is.
Yeah.
It's this incredible mixture of like way more impact than you would think a smaller guy would have, and just this incredible speed and agility and ability to sort of like duck around and sort of like, you know, like also just kind of like take a shot and then immediately swing into it, you know, like kind of, okay, I took a shot, but then I'm going to use that to kind of loop around you and then get you in an angle that you don't think I can get to.
Yeah, there's a shot of him at the end of this fight with Jocko that's like, after he's like kneed him in the face and he's clearly down and dazed and isn't getting back up, where it's this close-up on him that is almost like vampiric in a way because there's blood like streaming down from his mouth down his chin. And he's clearly just like savoring this whole thing, and he kind of like looks up to the sky.
Yeah.
Like it's this like moment of ecstasy for him.
Borderline like, orgasmic.
It's really like a weird, borderline supernatural, just like, oh my God, this guy is like this horrific force of nature.
And yeah, Taslim does not make it out. And in fact, Mad Dog is going to drag his body back to the 15th floor to his boss because he thinks, oh, well, this must be the guy that we needed to kill.
Yeah, because the boss is after Wayu, right? The lieutenant. Yeah. Like, it's never fully established that there seems to be some history there, right?
He knows who he is. Like, he's seen, okay. And there's a comment by some character that's like, that guy's been in this building as much as anyone who lives here. So it's clear that he's the corrupting force here. And obviously, you know, Tama wants him so that he can just, you know, ice him and be done with him. But, you know, I don't think Mad Dog actually knew who that was. He was just like, all right, I'll grab whatever boss cop I see around and we'll hopefully that'll do it. And they go back to the elevator together and the other guy, the brother, is there. And he's like, that's not the dude. And he's like, well, you didn't bring anyone, so I'm in a better position than you are. There's a rivalry between them that is never explicitly detailed, but it's clear that, like, it's not just that one is the crazy one and one is the more pragmatic one. Like, there is a little bit of a power struggle happening there, too.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, that's such a sort of classic, classic gangster shit.
Yeah.
Whether it's an actual criminal enterprise or an illegitimate government or whatever, you know, just the having your underlings constantly at each other's throats all the time is just a form of control.
And when they get back upstairs with the body in tow, there's a very dramatic bit here of the guy being like, you wouldn't come back here empty handed, would you? Let me see your hands.
They're empty.
Huh. I was wrong. You did come back empty-handed. And that's the moment you know that it's like, oh, it's kind of over for this dude.
Show me your hands. Empty. But I'm sure you have something. Turn them. Go ahead, turn them. I was wrong. You did waste my fucking time.
I found dead bodies. There's a lot of them.
Oh, yeah? What else?
If I had to guess, I'd say there are two more cops out there.
What if I said there are three cops left? Would you agree?
As I said, there's a lot of floors. You could give or take.
Give or take. You little prick. I'll admit I was impressed. I really was. But never underestimate the persistence of paranoia. See? There. After seeing that, I'd have sat still with shit in my pants. Seems these monitors are the only truth I got left. They never lie. They tell me everything I need to know. But there's one thing I wanted to ask. Why?
ballsy move like that? Ain't from no clash of conscience. But there's more to this. But then I think, it doesn't matter because you're gonna die soon anyway. I don't really give a shit about why anymore. No, what I want to know is, who is this little cunt that's been tearing my place up? And what would it mean for you? If you were to die in front of him? Or better yet, for him to be cut open in front of you!
Fuck you!
Yeah.
So is the idea here that he saw him go into this room with the cop and looks at his hands, there's no blood on them, there's no fight happened.
You didn't kill this guy, you didn't do anything.
You didn't
kill
this guy, right. Because he doesn't have a camera in the room, right? He just sees him go in and
yes,
comes back
that's
out.
That's correct.
And,
yeah, yeah. Okay. Or, you know, he really harps on the fact that you have nothing to show. Like, you didn't bring me anything.
And I saw you in the space with this cop, and there's nothing happened. So what happened?
Yeah.
And
and then he gets he's not empty-handed anymore. Now he's got a big hole in his hand.
Yeah.
Gets stabbed in the hand, pinned to the table.
And so this is around the time that we find our way into the... So I'm just trying to get all the pieces here and how everyone meets back up. Eventually, Rama finds his way... He finds his way back to Dagu and Wayuu, because Dagu ran off with Wayuu, because Joe Taslim was like, hey, stay on that dude. Don't let him get away. Mm-hmm. And then in the middle of all of that, I think is where they find the drug lord, or they find the drug lab.
Yeah. It's kind of it's kind of the last floor before you get to the boss, basically. You know,
yes.
Like they flat out say, like, we got to get to the boss, because that's the only way we're getting out of here. And, getting there won't be easy, and then they fight their way. Like, even the guys making the drugs are all, like, skilled martial artists.
And this is where we get into that whole bit where Wayuu is, like, throwing furniture at everyone while everyone else is doing actual martial arts.
Yeah. Yeah, like, Dagu definitely getting some moves in here, too. I guess that actor also is a pretty accomplished martial artist from what I read.
Yeah, he's a Taekwondo master, and also was part of the stunt team who helped with all the setting up all the stunt sequences.
A lot of cool running on tables, sliding under people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
No, this is a great, like, as drug lab action sequences go, this is a great one.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Puffs of cocaine and drugs or whatever it is they're making everywhere.
Indeterminate drugs.
Yeah,
that's all you need.
Yeah.
It's powder form. That's all you need to know.
Makes for good puffs.
Yeah. And then this is around, as they find their way out of this, this is where Rama sees that his brother is being tortured in the most fucking torture room you've maybe ever seen in your life that does not have actual, like, dungeon instruments in it. It's just a big locked room where that dude is just, like, meat tenderizing his torso.
Mm-hmm.
And this fight is so goddamn good, dude. Oh my god.
So yeah, he, you know, if we didn't say it before, and you've watched the movie, obviously, Mad Dog is established as somebody who lives for the fight.
Mm-hmm.
So he releases the brother... You know, basically prepares his first form. Maybe this is his second form,
yes,
if we're staying on the video game boss.
Well, he puts the gun down too, right? He's like, "Nah, this isn't how I work."
Yeah, he does that with Jaka as well, right? Like, I hate these things.
I mean,
pull a trigger. That's it.
That line earlier was like pretty goddamn sadistic. Of like, you know, there's no thrill in shooting somebody. Pulling a trigger is like ordering takeout.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Like, I can't savor that. Like, I need to beat you to death.
And they do such a job here of, I mean, it's clear that obviously Uwai as Rama is incredibly skilled as a martial artist. His brother is no slouch, despite the fact that he is grievously injured. But even you genuinely do not necessarily think that they are going to come out of this with both of them alive. Like they kill these dudes.
Like, they barely land a hit on him for, like, minutes at a time.
Yeah.
It's crazy, or at least a hit that means anything, you know? Like, this guy's just, like, unstoppable.
And it's edited and choreographed in a way that feels pretty... I mean, it's unbelievable, but in this universe feels believable.
Yeah.
It's like nobody's giving it away you know?
Yeah, the only part that got a little too movie for me is that, like, every time one of the brothers would go down, they would, like, kind of stay down long enough for the other one to do a one-on-one, you know?
A little, like, wrestling-like.
There's a little bit of the holding back before the sending the other guy in kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely a sense of that, but I also got the feeling that, like, as they were building up this fight, the intention was to show that they needed to work more together. Because, again, they haven't seen each other in 6 years. They haven't really worked, like, engaged in any kind of fisticuffs in a long time together. But as the fight moves along, you can feel them both kind of, like, sensing that, like, if you can hold down this leg or this arm long enough, I can get these shots in. Even if he knocks you down after that, then I can hold him down. Like, they kind of do a nice build with that to sort of, like, finding the strategy to beat the boss.
So they do eventually.
They do.
Yeah, as the deaths go in this movie, my girlfriend definitely thought this one was the grisliest, which I kind of can see.
What do they do, Brad?
He gets stabbed in the neck with half of a fluorescent light bulb tube.
Just a tiny little bit where blood is just pouring out.
And then keeps fighting.
For like a minute afterward.
Couple of minutes.
Yeah.
Despite blood pouring out of his neck, still kind of...
through the tube!
Not taking any from these guys. Do they break both of his arms in the final... It's unclear.
It sure looks like it.
They definitely, like... I forget which one. Is it Rama? One of them sort of intercepts punches from him with both arms, and it looks like, looking at it, it definitely seems like they break both of his arms while this tube is spouting blood out of. I can't look at this.
It's such an incredible, it's gross, but it is such an incredible visual, like, to have this thing out of his neck while he is still fighting.
They like, the thing is in his neck, they break both of his arms, it kind of looks like they break his back by kneeing him in the back.
Yeah.
And then once they've got him down, I can't even describe it. They grab the tube and drag it the rest of the way through his neck.
I will say my thought on that was, like, A, this is horrendous, and B, that tube would, I don't think it's got the integrity to,
fluorescent light tubes
sharp.
Do not hold that well.
But for the intent in this movie, he basically gets near decapitated by pulling this tube across his throat.
I mean, I think it's fitting for how unstoppable this guy has been established as being up to this point.
Yes.
That you kind of have to go all the way to take him down, which they do.
He definitely gets his second health bar.
Yes.
With this tube in there. But yes, it's grisly. And as someone who is, when I saw him fight the first time, I was like, oh, you cast this guy because he's the best at what he does.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he gets a fitting, improbable death for somebody who is, I think, the main villain in this movie. You know, he becomes the big bad.
Because there is no big fight with the drug lord at the end. Mm-hmm. Like, he's not a martial artist. He's not a dude who does, like, dirty work that does not involve him just shooting people, generally. So, you know, this is the final fight, more or less. Like, they do it, like, Wayu and Dagu do eventually get up to the final floor, and they do manage to break in and grab the drug lord, but then Wayu just shoots his comrade and is like, I'm getting out of here.
Yeah. Dagu got done dirty.
Mm-hmm.
Dirty.
He deserved better here. Yeah, I mean, the drug lord is basically a guy who controls his territory through intelligence and ruthlessness, right?
Yes.
Is how he stays on top. So, of course, once all of his minions are dead, there's not a whole lot he's going to do by himself.
No. And once...
It's still a good standoff, though.
Yeah. There's a good standoff when you know, the turn happens with Wayu, and then when they get down to the staircase, and we kind of have our little last lore dump here, as he kind of is like, you thought you were getting out of here. You thought you were so clever coming in here. I knew from the jump that you guys were coming. I was ready.
You'll never get out of here.
Shut up!
Did you honestly think it would be that easy to get in? Did you think we were that fucking stupid? I was waiting for you. We all were. Ready to pick you off one by one.
Didn't work too well, did it?
Huh? Oh, I don't know about that. You got at least 18 dead. No transportation. You're stuck here. You got no one left. And if we're talking strength in numbers,
we're talking a bullet. And I only need one for your fucking head!
You don't get it.
You're already dead. You've been dead since I got the call from Reza. Now I've got your attention. It was the name, right? Yeah. Reza and the rest of the suits have been happy with me since day one. Because I know how to pay, and more importantly, how much. But you, all you are is a collector. It was never about replacing me. They sent you here to die, you motherfucker.
Fuck you!
No, fuck you! Big fucking man! You listen to me! You think they'll let you join them at the top? Never! You always be looking up! You think when all this is over, they'll welcome you back and promote you? Make you a hero? Never! You fuck! You'll be met by someone emptying a gun into you. A fucking pillow over your face. Huh? Huh? When you are sleeping, you are fucking done! You are out! Asshole.
Be quiet.
Yeah.
And like, whether it's true or not, he definitely gets that seed planted, and it well, I don't know if it works out for him, but he definitely breaks his brain.
Yeah, and Wayuu just straight up shoots Tama. That's it. Yeah, he's just like,
for how over the top the whole movie is, I was expecting this to lead to some other kind of climax as they get him down out of the building or something. But instead for it to just turn out to be just a character moment for this shitty broken old dude that kind of resolves everything.
I don't think you can top that fight is the thing. I don't think top that sequence. And I think that if you're going to finish out things this way, yeah, sure. All right. Just have this guy finally, you know, give up and realize that like everything he's been doing is a lie and that like no one is coming to help him. So why not just fucking shoot the guy and then try to shoot yourself? Except, oops, you're out of bullets.
Oops.
You're going to prison.
I guess. I don't really understand the dynamics of this police force, so I assume he's either going to prison or he's dead.
Yeah, someone will probably kill him before he goes to trial, but...
Right, yes. It seems like this whole thing is dirty enough. No, there's maybe a lot in this movie about, not everybody on the police force is a scumbag.
But maybe some of the people in leadership definitely are.
But yeah. Enough where you feel like, this police force might have its problems.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, there's the box of evidence they walk out with that is kind of implied to basically like break the whole thing wide open.
Yeah.
Expose the whole force. So
is the Raid 2 have anything to do with this movie?
I read the synopsis and it sounds like that kind of proceeds directly from that.
Okay. So like that box, like what happens with the evidence and taking down the police?
Like Rama goes undercover, right?
That's okay. My recollection, yeah.
Undercover, based on all that, to try to expose all the corruption and stuff.
And, okay. And funnily enough, Yaya Ruyan is in that one too, but as a different character.
Huh.
Because I guess they could not bring him back in some way.
Did they give him enough of a different look to like sell that he's a different character?
I'm not even sure they do. I have not watched The Raid 2 probably since it came out, which was around, if I remember correctly, 2014. But my real explanation is just like that dude's just back, but he's a different guy.
I mean, you get your not necessarily happy ending, but you know, Rama makes it out. The brothers part ways, and the one brother is like, "I'm gonna keep doing what I do.
I'm in charge now.
I'm good at it."
It's a poetic ending, you know.
Yes,
I've climbed the corporate ladder.
That's right.
You know, it's very much like, get out of this life of crime, come with me, you know, like that exchange where he's like, where his brother, the criminal, is like, I can protect you in my world, but can you do the same for me in yours?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so.
And
I don't know if the brother is involved in the sequel or not. I won't look that up, but Rama kind of implies like, hey, they're going to show up and tear this place to the ground. Like you might be kind of fucked if you stay here. If you don't give this up, but what choice?
Well, his
does
indication is like
point?
We'll be gone. We're not going to be here when that happens.
It's like, hey, I'm good at this. I'll take my chances.
Yeah, we'll find another tower block to go set up in. You know, but yeah, that is The Raid in a nutshell. Did it live up to the hype?
It surpassed it for me. for sure.
That makes me so happy to hear.
It's like, I just like on the floor by the end of this thing.
It is. It really, I mean, look, I've watched a lot of Asian action cinema, and mostly in the ensuing years, like it's been the last decade and change since I've really started getting heavily into that stuff. But like, this movie has always loomed large since the first time I saw it. And yeah, like coming back to it now, like I'm still genuinely impressed with how much they were able to pull off, both at that budget and just like what, you know, what these performers were capable of doing. You know, the direction is fantastic too. Like, again, it wouldn't work if the editing wasn't like tight and made you feel like you were in the thick of this shit. Mm. But like the performers themselves, like it's, you understand why these guys went on to become sought after performers in, you know, both in international and Hollywood action cinema. Like, they fucking kill it.
Yeah, yeah. It's the relentless brutality, and like it sounds kind of like macabre, I guess, but the inventiveness of the kills.
Yes.
You know, it's just like over and over and over, I feel like I'm just seeing things I've never seen before. You know,
totally.
Like this. Which, after decades of action movies, martial arts movies, all sorts of movies in this vein, like, seems like it would be very hard to do things that haven't been done before.
It's nice to feel like you can still be surprised.
Yeah, even if it's kind of morbidly surprised.
Vinny, how'd you feel at the end of this?
I liked it a lot. Mm-hmm. I'm on my list. It goes right between on my list of all things as they get more and more ridiculous.
All the movies.
It goes, right above Assault on Precinct 13 and right below Dracula. It's in that top upper echelon. I'll say that's the top third. So.
Yeah.
It's up there for sure. It's, you know, look, I have a soft spot for They Live and Demolition Man Red October.
Mm-hmm.
So hard to beat those. But action wise,
oh, yeah.
This is probably near the top of the list. Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, I think story wise had a little more going for it. And I think kind of emotionally had a little more going for it. But
sure.
Action wise, yeah, man, this is like an action fantasy movie where somebody finally was able to realize all the weird shit they wanted to do in their head,
mm-hmm.
and the technology was finally there to do it.
Well, speaking of action fantasy in this vein, next week we have another film that also takes place in a similar kind of location, but in a totally different setting, in 2012's Dread. Now, Vinny, you and I, we had that poster up in the Giant Bomb East office for years.
It's true.
You've seen this movie, correct?
I have seen this movie in parts. I don't remember sitting down. In my memory, I don't have a, like, I can think back and imagine scenes from this movie, but it's not cohesive.
Okay. Brad, you haven't seen this one. What do you know about it?
Carl Urban?
Yep.
Right? I think that's about it. Was there some 3D release? Was this part of the 3D
yes.
craze? Wasn't it called like Dread 3D or something?
I don't remember if they put 3D in the title, but yes, this was definitely a movie that came out amid the 3D boom of the early teens. It is one of the only movies from that era, I will say, survived the transfer to 2D, not feeling like it was in some way compromised. Like the 3D in that movie, I did see that movie in 3D when it came out. It was pretty well utilized for the stuff that they used it for, but I've gone back and since watched it not in 3D, and I don't think it suffers at all for not having that presentation, because who the fuck has a 3D TV anymore?
Yeah. Technically, mine still does 3D. Maybe I should.
No kidding, really?
See if I can. It's an old TV.
Okay.
Yeah, I remember the response to this being like, people just going like, oh, wait, shit, this is kind of amazing.
What? Which one is more red, Judge Dredd or Dredd? Because that in my mind, there's a lot of shots of like a lot of like red tinted places with red lighting.
I'm trying to remember Dredd or the original Judge Dredd, which was the Sylvester Stallone film you mentioned,
yeah.
which is terrible. So there is like a decent amount of like weird kind of neon psychedelic lighting in 2012's Dread, specifically
okay.
the sequences around the future drug in the movie, which is called Slow-Mo. We'll talk more about that, I'm sure. But
I might be confusing a lot of Judge Dredd with Dredd, so I'll be curious once we watch it to know which one I have more memories of.
All you need to know is Carl Urban never takes the helmet off. It takes place in a tower block similar to The Raid, but the the action and the style of it is much pulpier, much more comic book, because it is obviously based on a comic book. And Lena Headey, as the bad lady, the villain of the film, is turning in some of the best fucking work of her career. And I mean that sincerely, as someone who enjoys her when she gets real villainous.
Okay.
All right. So that's what you have to look forward to for next week. I think you will like this movie. I mean, maybe it doesn't have the same martial arts flavor as this one, but I think it's a pretty great, pretty stylish action movie in its own vein. So look forward to that. As always, thank you, Brad. Thank you, Vinny.
And thank you.
And thank you to everyone at home who has been listening and watching along with us. We'll see you next time.